This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 19th of October, 2012. Hello and welcome to the Winchester District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 19th of October, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Good morning.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And Bobby Sanderson.
Good morning.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now, announcements this week, we start with What's On. And we've got a few items. Firstly, Winchester Cathedral on Tuesday the 23rd of October has a lunchtime concert, and that's being carried out by the Winchester Youth Orchestra. It's a free concert between 1pm and 2pm, but there is a retiring collection. At the Theatre Royal next week, from Thursday the 25th to Saturday the 27th of October at 8pm, is The Importance of Being Earnest, and there is also a matinee on Saturday. So that's Thursday the 25th to Saturday the 27th at 8pm, The Importance of Being Earnest at the Theatre Royal. And the Theatre Royal box office is 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. At the Anvil Basingstoke on Tuesday the 23rd of October at 7:45pm, there's An Evening with Roger Moore. And if you're interested in tickets for that, the box office for the Anvil is 01256 844 244. That's 01256 844 244. And also at Basingstoke at the Haymarket Theatre, from Wednesday the 24th to Saturday the 27th of October at 7:30, and there is a matinee on Thursday and Saturday, it's Mansfield Park. If you want more details or tickets, the Haymarket Theatre box office is the same as the Anvil. It's 01256 844 244. That's 01256 844 244. Now, lighting up time ends on Friday the 19th of October at 7:37am and begins at 6:04pm. And next Wednesday the 24th of October, it ends at 7:45am and begins at 5:54pm. If you have any problems with your recording, please contact Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826, and there's a card reminding you of that number in your wallet. And don't forget that if you don't wish to listen to any particular item on the recording, just skip forward to the next track by pressing the forward button on the top of your Sapphire player. Now, the main headlines this week: Hat Fair Hit by Cash Crisis, Hair-raising trip to the salon, and tributes to arson victims. They were such a lovely family. So, Nikki, may we have the headline behind the first story, please? The story behind the first headline.
Again, Hat Fair hit by cash crisis. Winchester Hat Fair bosses have frozen a back office post and cut the hours of its artistic director to stave off a cash crisis, weeks before they need to plan the next year's event. The Hampshire Chronicle can also reveal that the City Council refused to advance a £40,000 lifeline to the street festival, which is waiting for £138,000 promised by the EU, some of which is long overdue. Council chiefs asked the Hat Fair to do some further sums and come back, according to Chris Turner, one of five directors who sit on the board. As a result, the cash-strapped charity decided not to fill a vacant administrator post and to temporarily reduce the hours of artistic director Kate Hazel, the only other paid member of staff who was already part-time. Professor Turner, who has been on the board for about 18 months, said this would ease the problem until December, when some Arts Council funding is expected. The Hat Fair, which started in 1974, is thought to be grappling with its biggest crisis in years. Yet only in March this year, the Street Festival's Arts Council grant rocketed from £80,000 a year to £140,000 for 3 years, putting its finances on a firmer footing. Professor Turner, who is also Executive Director of Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, stressed the popular event was facing a short-term problem. He said, "We are in the middle of an interesting and tricky time. We are waiting for EU money. We know absolutely when the £138,000 arrives, all our cash flow problems will be resolved. But at the moment, it is hard, as we are having to book acts and plan next year's festival." He said next month, Hat Fair organisers were due to meet City Council officers on the Safety Advisory Group to plan the large-scale event. Named after the tradition of throwing money into hats, the Hat Fair has grown out of all recognition from humble beginnings as a busker's fair. Now it is an internationally renowned event, with dozens of artists from across the world performing in the city's ancient streets over 4 days in early July. It attracts tens of thousands of people to the city and receives more public money than ever before. In total, the Hat Fair received £250,000 in grants in 2011. In addition to EU funding, the Arts Council has pledged £140,000, the City Council £24,500, and the City Council £5,000 in 2012. However, the charity has been rapped over the knuckles by Watchdog Body for failing to submit its annual accounts on time in previous years. A spokesman for the Charity Commission said, "We note that the charity was late in filing its accounts for the years ending 2010 and has not yet filed annual documents for the year ending 2008. The Hat Fair published accounts for the year ending March 2011, the latest available, show the charity managed to reduce its deficit to £886, compared to £40,497 the previous year. It spent £29,143 on wages and salaries. Councillor Robert Humby, deputy leader of Winchester City Council, said officers wanted more up-to-date financial information from the Hat Fair, including its draft accounts for 2011-12. He said, "We want to be able to help the Hat Fair, as it is a very important part of Winchester, but in order to make the decision, we need to clearly understand what its financial position is. We want details about when the EU funding will be paid and how secure it is, whether it has been signed off by the EU." In the summer, the Hat Fair was dealt a heavy blow after being forced to cancel two of its biggest acts due to bad weather. It meant the Hat Fair, based in Jury Street, lost about £8,000, expected to have been collected in hats.
Hair-raising trip to the salon. Hairdressers in Twyford will pick up their broomsticks and pointy hats to celebrate Halloween in style, while also raising money for charity. Marika Raymond, owner of the Raymond Salon, with her colleague Deborah Oram, will be dressing up as good witches as they invite people to have a trim on October the 31st, ready for their Halloween celebrations. All money made at the salon on the day will be donated to Diabetes UK, a charity supporting the 3.7 million people in the UK living with the condition. Marika, who learnt her trade from her celebrity uncle Raymond Teasy Weasy Besson, also hopes to find a face painter willing to volunteer for the day, painting the faces of the young and young at heart, keeping with a witches and wizards theme. Marika, who has a friend with diabetes, said, "Every 2 years, I donate to a charity rather than spending money on Christmas cards and stamps, and this event is part of that." As the event, running between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m, is expected to be popular, making an appointment for a haircut or to have your face painted is advisable. To book or to volunteer as a face painter on the day, call Marika on 01962 715 714. That is 01962 715 714. And the item is illustrated by a large picture with Marika Raymond and Deborah Oram wearing pointy hats and with a couple of dummies also wearing pointy hats.
They were such a lovely family. Teachers and parents in the city have spoken of their shock at the deaths of five members of a former Winchester family. Abdul Shakur moved his family from Winchester where he worked at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, to Harlow in Essex around a year ago. This week he's coming to terms with the death of his wife and four of his children in a suspected arson attack on their home. Sabah Usmani, also a doctor, sons Sohaib, 11, Ryan, 6, 12-year-old daughter Hira, died in their end-of-terrace house. A third son, Munib, aged 9, and daughter Maheen, aged 3, were rescued by fire crews from Monday morning's blaze and taken to hospital in a critical condition. But Munib died later at the Princess Alexandra Hospital, Harlow. Hira, Sohaib and Munib all attended Stanmore Primary School while their family were living in Winchester. Acting teacher Darren Nickerson said, "The tragedy had shocked and upset pupils." He said, "We are very sad to hear the news of the tragic deaths of former members of our community. We've had some pupils come to us very upset, and all of the children and staff who remember them have been asked to take part in creating a memory book to commemorate and celebrate the family. They were a lovely family all round, and the children were always willing to help out and were a big part of school life. We have fond memories of Hira winning a talent competition in 2011 with her singing, and Munib was always full of life and a happy-go-lucky child." Julie Reed, who taught Munib at Stanmore, said, "My reaction to the news was disbelief. I thought, how could that have happened to such a loving family, such a wonderful family, such a special little boy?" Amanda Jones, former head teacher of Stanmore, said, "They were just a lovely family and very supportive of the school, so it is a huge loss. I saw the image of the family on TV yesterday and I just got goosebumps and couldn't believe it. How can this happen?" Mother of two, Joanne Smith, aged 46, of Peninsula Road, West Hill, also paid tribute. She said, "Hira and my daughter Zara were quite close and used to walk home from school together. My children heard about their deaths on the news and were very shocked. To think the fire could have been deliberate is absolutely sickening." Dr. Shakur was said to have fought hard to save his family. He suffered from smoke inhalation and shock. He's been transferred to the Broomfield Hospital to be closer to his daughter. Forensic officers were still examining the scene, and a spokesman for Essex Police said, "The cause of the fire is still under investigation, and detectives cannot rule in or rule out all lines of inquiry and cannot speculate on the motive or the cause."
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death notices and then Christian comment. And firstly, the announcements of deaths in the Chronicle this week. Bravery. Anthony Bravery, who died on the 9th of October. Chalk. Peter Chalk, who died on the 15th of October, aged 80. Flowers. Muriel Joyce Flowers, who died peacefully in a hospice in Bradford, aged 85. Pawson. Major Henry Anthony Pawson, OBE, Tony, who died after a short illness on the 12th of October. Salmon. Dennis Salmon died peacefully on the 13th of October, aged 83. Wild. Ethel Wild, known as Molly, formerly of Salisbury Road, Alsford, died peacefully on the 10th of October, aged 96. And lastly, Woodruff, Sian Woodruff, who died peacefully in hospital, aged 68. And Sian, together with her husband Brian, was a long-serving volunteer of Winchester Talking Newspaper. And we send our condolences to Brian and the family. And now we move on to Christian Comment, Bobby.
And this week it's offered by Rosemary Baker. And she heads it, Giving, Growing and Sharing. Last Saturday I was walking in Winchester High Street, the sun shining on the market stalls, heavily laden with brightly coloured rows of fruit and vegetables. It was hard to imagine, let alone believe, that elsewhere in the world people might be starving, or even in this country might be going without enough food to sustain them. On Sunday I attended Harvest Festival in King Somborne, where the gifts of produce and the offering were donated to the city night shelter. It was a reminder for those who have plenty to remember those who have little. Tuesday was World Food Day and is celebrated every year around the world on October the 16th in honour of the date of the founding of the Food and Agriculture Organisation of the United Nations in 1945. The day is celebrated widely by many other organisations concerned with food security, including the World Food Programme. And the World Food Day theme for 2012 is Agricultural Cooperatives, Key to Feeding the World. Like me, I expect you ate your normal meals, unless it was something special, a birthday or anniversary, or perhaps you were ill or awaiting an operation. However, nearly one in seven people in the world suffer from undernourishment. And yet, the world has the means to eliminate hunger and fuel sustainable development. There's a broad agreement that smallholders will provide much of the extra food needed to feed more than 9 million people by 2050. One of the necessary steps to achieving food security is to support and invest in cooperatives, producer organisations, and other rural institutions. Food is not just important for physical nourishment. As my friend and I were driving around the countryside talking, we realised how many of our memories were around meals. Memorable both for special events, holidays, or the people we shared them with. Eating is not just part of our culture. It also forms an important part of our religious practices. The Bible is full of meals, both in Old and New Testaments. Jesus used meals as a means to meet people and to preach his message. His last meal with his disciples is something we remember at every communion, Mass, and Eucharist. Now, we may not be part of an agricultural cooperative, but we have other opportunities to share our resources and to cooperate in ventures locally, such as the Basics Food Bank, the Trinity Centre and the Night Shelter, as well as giving generously to charities which distribute food overseas and help people to grow their own and to market the surplus.
Thank you, Bobby. Now we move on to letters to the editor. And if you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you of course can do so by telephoning 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. So, Nikki, can we have the first letter, please?
And this is from George Beckett. Realistic approach minimises damage. Sir, having retired from local politics, I thought my many years of writing to the Chronicle would be over, but I ought to respond to Judith Martin's letter in which she seeks to combine two unrelated actions of mine 20 years apart and comes to an obscure conclusion. The M3 campaign was fought by a loose coalition of people with different aims. As a realist, I thought it inconceivable that the last link of the motorway should be stopped. So, as chairman of Compton and Shawford Parish Council, I campaigned for a solution that would minimise the effect of the road on the villages. 20 years on, as leader of the City Council, my approach was again that of a realist. The Council was legally bound to provide for housing numbers imposed by the Labour government. Failure to do so would have meant open season for developers to come forward and more damaging greenfield sites. It was because we could not show how that target was to be met that inspectors granted approval for 200 homes at Pitt Manor. Only by allocating sufficient land would Winchester regain control of events. It was plain that to allocate land that would almost certainly be granted permission anyway was the least worst option. Development at Barton Farm had twice been approved in principle, and it was the subject of a further appeal against the council's refusal of permission. So it was clear it was very likely to be approved over the head of the City Council. Judith Martin, as an ex-Lib Dem member of the council, will know Barton Farm was first allocated by the Lib Dem administration prior to mine, against strong arguments from George Hollingbury and myself that it would set a nasty precedent. She also reels out that old myth that the new local plan was pushed through by Southern Parishes members. In the seven-hour debate, many amendments were put and some passed. All 18 town ward members could have put an amendment removing Barton Farm from the plan. None did. Not one. George Beckett, Otterburn Road, Winchester.
This letter is from Peter Rees of Winchester, with the title Let's Back This Bold and Exciting Scheme. Attitudes to Barton Farm have mostly been negative and oppositional. With the recent appeal decision, a closer appraisal of the benefits and opportunities is needed. Winchester's housing targets were never going to be met, no matter how many piecemeal developments. Development of socially beneficial housing for people on the City Council waiting lists is urgent and previously not addressed on this scale. Arguments against Barton Farm have mainly come from homeowners wishing to preserve a piece of inauspicious farmland. Resistance has denied people the right to an affordable home, only lawyers gaining from this procrastination. Council resistance has been overcome by government. It is unfair to blame Carla. Playing by the rules of the current free market economy, who should blame them for investment and perseverance? This development has magnificent opportunities for collaborative and imaginative planning. A fine example of sustainability creating investment and employment. It will involve local people in its creation, providing homes for those who want to live and work locally, eventually enhancing the transport infrastructure and environment. It is a bold and exciting scheme representing planned, large-scale regeneration. As an adjunct to the imaginative Silver Hill project, it offers immense opportunities for sustained economic growth. Together, these developments have great potential for investment, employment, prosperity, and a renaissance for this historic city. It will eradicate the need for further piecemeal development, providing at least 800 new affordable homes. The proper criteria for these must be established early, maintained, and delivered. Collaboration with CALA is vital to ensure the construction stage is managed sensitively. The opposition should have the magnanimity and humility to accept defeat and to work towards creating this sustainable reality. Let us now have a new SBF campaign. Support Barton Farm. Barton Farm has been saved for the right reason at the right time. It will eventually be seen to benefit everyone concerned about careful and systematic planning for the future of successive generations. Peter Rees, Monarch Way, Winchester.
And this one is headed, A City Sacrificed for No Good Reason. So, it was interesting to hear from Theresa May at the Conservative conference that one third of the country's housing need has been caused by immigration. An overcrowded London is causing families to move away. And what could be better than to move to a pleasant town like Winchester with a good train service to the capital? And yes, Barton Farm would provide many jobs, both in building houses and in the infrastructure. But in 20 years' time, the children of the families who move here will themselves need homes, and the problems will start all over again. What should have been in place was a population policy for special towns like Winchester, as, for example, the label of heritage status. This was, I know, suggested by local conservation bodies and the idea put, I think, to English Heritage. But sadly, the suggestion was not taken to a higher level. What is special about Winchester is its comparative smallness. There is still brownfield space on which low-cost housing could be built. And the fact that the County Council has not seen fit to use some of its £307 million reserves to build these houses needs an explanation. It seems that Winchester has been sacrificed for no good reason at all. That's from Mrs. Rosemary Poole, St. James Villas, Winchester.
I'm afraid we have another one about Barton Farm from Andrew Beadle. All parties must share responsibility for Barton Farm decision. Sir, I pity your correspondent, Judith Martin, was not more even-handed in attributing responsibility for the current position on Barton Farm. As an ex-Lib Dem city councillor, she knows very well that all parties bear some responsibility for how the present position has come about. In 2001, it was the then Lib Dem-controlled city council which first earmarked Barton Farm as a reserve site. It is true that in 2009, George Beckett advocated developing the site, but although the vote was secret, we know most councillors in both parties must have voted for its inclusion in the draft local development framework. At their recent conference, Lib Dems debated housing, so I looked up their official website. On there, it says that they passed a motion calling for a major house-building programme of at least 300,000 homes a year. As this far exceeds the number built for many years, in no way could it be achieved by building just on brownfield sites. Judith Martin asks how much more will the Conservatives fail to conserve before the next election? What happened to the coalition? Surely the Lib Dems will not try to have it both ways, press for more house building while blaming others for the resultant loss of land. Andrew Beadle from Wentworth Grange, Winchester.
This letter, entitled Market is Good for Winchester, is from Ian Tate, councillor for St Michael Ward, Winchester. As Napoleon so accurately said, Britain is a nation of shopkeepers, and although market stalls may not have been quite what he had in mind, I feel the spirit of what he was saying holds true. I know most of the Winchester stall holders. They are unfailingly polite, responsive, and keen to share their thoughts. They are proud to be here and keen to promote our city. The range of goods is interesting and changes weekly. The market is a success because these traders offer what the public wants, although it's as much about service, invariably excellent, come rain or shine. In the past, some shops, like M&S, made great play of selling British goods, though now the world's their oyster. That's not true of the essential knitwear company run by Mark and Sue Barr, who proudly sell British-made clothes. They are not alone in working to ensure our market is a success, and I could go through every stall saying why they deserve recognition. In harsh economic conditions, the market has protected Winchester from the worst effects of the recession, and the existing shops are also benefiting from higher footfall. Let's not forget other businesses. I have shopped at Gives and Hawkes for over 30 years, and the friendship of their staff is as important to me as the goods they sell. Reflex, sadly now closed, was run by the truly inspirational John Inchley, who many of us remember fondly. Forme, Char, Cadogan, Mawson's, Woodruff's, Belfine Arts, to name a few. All represent the best the country has to offer and explains why Winchester remains such a success. There will always be fine-tuning required, but fundamentally the market is good for Winchester. Ian Tate, Councillor St Michael Ward, Berwick Road, Winchester.
Another letter now on development. Greenfield gaps are vital for the future, writes Margaret Wart. Sir, we are yet another group of residents campaigning against the East Lee local development plan. We are fighting to save the green gap between North East Lee's Boyart Wood and Otterbourne and Albrook villages. This area, protected for so long by borough planners, is under threat from proposed house building along Boyart Lane and, incongruously, from industrial development at the top of Knowle Hill. The former will inevitably, we fear, open the floodgates for further development, as one resident put it. I see hundreds of people using it for recreational reasons, exercise, jogging, cycling, horse riding, or just observing the wildlife. It's worth reminding councillors that this is a main walking route for Boyart Wood residents to the polling station at Otterbourne. Local people will remember councillors' choices. As for the industrial development on Knowle Hill, we are struggling to understand why, without a full traffic appraisal and apparently against the planner's own ecological and habitat assessments, this site has been chosen. There is little local infrastructure to support the development, which will be seen for miles across the Itchen Navigation Valley. We will lose an incomparable view, probably the best in East Lee, all the way to the South Downs National Park, and accessible and popular with families. In compensation, the planners propose a cycle path to get to work. Up a hill. Great for Bradley Wiggins, but not for most ordinary folk. And retain the footpath through the proposed industrial site. Wow. We are urging Eastleigh Borough Council that choosing greenfield sites may be cheaper than other options, but keeping greenfield gaps is vital in maintaining a sustainable East Lee for future generations. And that comes from Margaret Ward, who is the coordinator of the Albrook Action Against the East Lee Local Plan.
And a final letter, entitled Perfect Timing, from John Stanning of Winchester. So when on September the 28th the Department for Communities and Local Government signified, as you well put it, the end of the road for Barton Farm, its detailed decision noted that Carla Holmes' scheme was subject to an additional lane being provided on the southern side of the overbridge at junction 9 of the M3 and an additional queue warning sign on the A34. Improvement of the A34-M3 junction, though much needed, had been delayed for years. Yet within a week of the Barton Farm decision, the Highways Agency announced a scheme to improve the junction. What a remarkable coincidence. John Stanning, George Easton Drive, Winchester. And that concludes the letters. Now we move on to historical items. Nikki.
100 years ago, 1912... Letters from the Hon Secretary of the Winchester Diocesan Social Services Committee saying that they've had their attention drawn to assaults on children under 16, that the conclusion has been come to that, in bad cases, the reintroduction of flogging is desirable, and inquiring whether there has been an increase in these assaults in recent years and whether the bench consider the law as it stands gives magistrates and judges sufficient powers were laid before the court. Second item. On Monday last, an appreciative audience met in the club room, Minster Street, for a lecture on the Greek drama. The lecturer showed how tragedy was evolved from old choral dances common among the early Attic settlers and used by them to honour the god of the vintage. The poet Aeschylus and his celebrated trilogy, the Oresteia, were also dealt with, the lecturer pointing out how very important a factor the chorus was.
50 years ago, 1962. You are staking the future of your firm in this wonderful building. These words, spoken at the Guildhall luncheon preceding the opening of SCAT's headquarters on Tuesday, summed up the importance of the step the Society is taking in its bid to anticipate progress, and also hinted at the general confidence in the venture. The speaker was Major J. Scott Hopkins, MP for North Cornwall and Joint Parliamentary Secretary to the Ministry of Agriculture. The second item, traffic on the A31 was equivalent to one vehicle every 5 seconds of the day at a site near Cadnam Roundabout, at which it was proposed to erect 4 houses. This was stated by Mr. S. E. Diamond for the Ministry of Transport at an inquiry at Lyndhurst, at which Mr. C. N. Cox of Messrs. Fox and Sons appealed on behalf of the executors of the late Mr. W. G. Holly against planning refusal for development on 3/5 of an acre of land.
Moving nearer our time, 25 years ago, 1987, squatters at Winchester's disused Victoria Hospital may worsen the homeless problem they're protesting against. The empty buildings were to be handed over to the council to be opened as a temporary homeless hostel on November the 1st. But Housing Chairman Mr. John Cloyne warned that the council could not take them over if they're occupied. The squatters moved into the former nurses' quarters a fortnight ago. They said they were protesting about the length of time the council was taking to convert the building. And a second very interesting item. The latest discovery at the Brooks excavation in Winchester has created a lot of, excuse it, egg-citement, because where 1,000-year-old egg has been found intact beneath the tons of soil that have accumulated over the centuries. It was found in a Saxon rubbish pit, in a thick layer of straw. The straw that cushioned the egg survived because the deeper ground is waterlogged at the brooks.
Thank you. Now up to date completely with Chronicle comment and first person. Nikki, thank you.
In the spotlight for once, heroes all. They are the unsung heroes in our community who go about their daily lives selflessly helping others. They are the hordes of charity workers and volunteers who seek no gratitude, content in the knowledge they are doing good for their fellow man and woman. That's why it's a pleasure to put them in the spotlight for once, as our roundup of the Wessex Charity Awards does this week. Special individuals who work and volunteer for charities in the region celebrated at a glittering gala dinner for 300 guests at Winchester Guildhall. Heartwarming films of the exceptional work of the 16 finalists were screened, as the winners rightly took the plaudits. Where would we be without people like them? And another item, staying on the subject of good work in the community, Winchester Roundtable is looking for more volunteers to help run this year's bonfire night. Not only is it a great night out for all the family, but the money raised on the evening is ploughed back into the district. No fewer than 27 good causes have benefited in the past 12 months alone.
First person this week is by Ron Allison and has the title Last Word to the Queen. A chance this week to gather together a few loose ends. Some of those thoughts that have been hanging around in my mind in recent days. If they are linked in any way, it is in the word gather, or perhaps gathering. In my last column, I wrote of the memorable occasion when hundreds of us were in Winchester Cathedral to celebrate 100 years of the school now known as St. Bede Church of England Primary School. Last week, another group gathered in Zizi's restaurant in Winchester High Street to mark the 240th anniversary of the first publication of this very newspaper. Another splendid event it was, too. The special supplement the Chronicle published was much appreciated, and I greatly relished telling anyone who was daft enough to encourage me that it was 60 years since I had first walked into what was then the Chronicle's building. Among the great and the good of the county at the reception representing the church, academia, the law, business, farming, and just about every other aspect of Hampshire life, were the present reporting staff of the paper. It is in good hands, and I am sure they will carry on the paper's great traditions of gathering and reporting the news. The means by which it will be delivered will continue to develop, as they have in recent years. As the editor, Keith Redbourne, told us, the Chronicle's overall reach, online as well as in print, is now greater than it has ever been. Farther afield, two other gatherings are already taxing our political leaders, and indeed many others of us. The United Kingdom and the European Union. Will there be changes? Look ahead 10 years, when the Chronicle will be marking 250 years of business. Will Scotland still be part of the United Kingdom? Will the United Kingdom, in whatever form, still be a member of the European Union? Will it make any difference to us in Hampshire? Well, at least I can answer that last question. Yes, a separated Scotland or a UK out of Europe, or both, would lead to profound changes in many ways. The debates over these issues, whether or not we still will be gathering together in political and economic terms as we now do, are about to get ever more intense. A thought with which to end. In 1977, when talk of devolution was much in the air, there was a gathering in Westminster Hall when the Queen replied to a loyal address from both Houses of Parliament during the Silver Jubilee celebrations. "I cannot but recall," she said, "that I had been crowned Queen of the United Kingdom."
Thank you. Now we continue with items of general news.
Bobby. What did you say about that? More volunteers are needed to make the night sparkle. Winchester Roundtable is appealing for more volunteers to help this year's bonfire night go with a bang. A total of around 250 volunteers, more than ever before, are needed to run the ever-popular event, which will be staged in Winchester on November the 3rd. That's a Saturday. The appeal for volunteers was made as Roundtable announced it made charitable donations totalling £58,000 to almost 100 good causes in the area over the past 3 years. As members prepare for this year's Winchester Bonfire Night Spectacular, tablers have thanked members of the public for their continuing support. In addition, the Cash for Causes scheme, in association with the Hampshire Chronicle, has helped 27 charities, and tablers have also helped with activities such as a trip by the Stroke Support Group to Hillier Arboretum, and to provide protective equipment for Winchester litter pickers for a cleaner and prouder Winchester. Last year, Winchester Roundtable prepared and delivered 30 Christmas hampers to both older members of the community and young carers, helping to spread some festive cheer. The group has also made donations across the community to a range of organisations, including the Hello Martha Fund, a Winchester-based charity that helps cystic fibrosis sufferers, the Joe Glover Trust, which supports children and their families coping with cancer, the Geriactors, which performs murder mysteries in village halls to raise money for charities, and the Winnall Rock School, which provides free weekly music lessons for youngsters aged 10 to 18. Meanwhile, the Round Table is looking for volunteers for the bonfire night from around 4:15 p.m. to 9 p.m. to marshal and generally assist on the night. Ian Wilson, the Round Table's Community Services Chairman, said, "In these tough economic times, it's more important than ever that people give whatever they can, as your money really makes a difference. We wouldn't be able to run the Winchester Bonfire Night without the continued support of the public. And we are also appealing for people to give generously on the night of the bonfire. It's only through their generosity that we can continue to run this free event and support worthy causes."
And this is about the awards evening, salutes unsung heroes of charity. And we have a lot of pictures, mainly all taken with David Gower of Jonathan Hart. I'll read the story first. Representatives from charities throughout the region were honoured last week at the Wessex Charity Awards Gala evening and awards presentation at Winchester Guildhall. Special individuals who work and volunteer for charities in the region celebrated at a glamorous gala dinner for 300 guests. Heartwarming films of the exceptional work of the 16 finalists were screened at the third awards presentation evening, hosted by cricketing legend David Gower and organised by Winchester-based Charisma Charity Recruitment. Applause erupted from the guests, who included charities businesses, the Deputy Mayor and Mayoress of Winchester, the Mayor and Mayoress of Southampton, and the Hon. Virginia Lovell, the Deputy Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire. As well as receiving hand-engraved trophies, each winning charity received a cash donation from the organisers and sponsors. The top charity prize, the Charity of the Year Award, went to the Rowan's Hospice near Waterlooville, which provides specialist care to people affected by life-limited illnesses. The Lifetime Achievement Award went to Phyllis Edwards, founder of Diverse Abilities Plus in Poole. 57 years ago, Phyllis joined with other families to offer care and service to adults and children with learning and physical disabilities, and she has been recognised by the staff and users of the charity for her outstanding commitment to the charity. Founders of the Wessex Charity Awards, Jenny Warner, said, "This wonderful evening celebrated the best of human nature, philanthropy in its true meaning. All the charities nominated for an award were congratulated for their dedication and commitment to helping others." And some of those in these photographs were Jonathan Harker from Ecclesiastal Insurance, Philip Lamiman from CSC Citation Centre and David Gower, Will Kendall from Rathbones, Paula Wiseman from Simon Says and David Gower, Kelvin Smith from Parity for Disabled, David Gower, and Soraya Kayum from the Bangkok Brasserie, Richard Perry from Morris Crocker, Leanne Hubbard from Southampton Site, and David Gower, Martin Phillips from Santander, Mark Powell from Diverse Abilities Plus, and David Gower, and finally Jeff Trowbridge from Lester Aldridge, and Ruth White from the Rowan's Hospice, and David Gower.
Fat blamed for manhole spillage. Southern Water has urged Winchester residents to avoid pouring fat down the sink after waste burst through a city manhole. The manhole in Southgate Street overflowed last Thursday afternoon at around 3:30 p.m. due to a build-up of fat blocking the sewer. Southern Water officials were on the scene but were unable to remove the smelly blockage due to its severity. They returned on Friday and cleared it with heavy jet equipment. A spokesman said, "We'd like to thank customers for alerting us to this problem, which was caused by a build-up of fat in the sewer that led to a blockage. Fat, oil and grease can be extremely harmful to the sewer system, and Southern Water has an ongoing campaign to encourage people not to pour it down the plug hole." The spokesman added, "More than 75% of sewer blockages are caused by a build-up of fat, oil or grease, which can get into the system via sinks, drains or dishwashers. Over time, this hardens to form a concrete-like material that can block the entire pipe and cause flooding as sewage is forced to escape through manholes and into streets and rivers, or even worse, into homes. Southern Water advises residents to pour fat into containers and dispose of it with household rubbish once it has hardened."
Is this a ring I see before me? Oh yes, it's supposed to be the most romantic moment of your life. So deciding the right time to pop the question was proving a little difficult for David Hopkins. Having bought an engagement ring a month before, he'd twice tried to propose to girlfriend Stacey Watkins. But each time the vital moment just didn't seem right and he got cold feet, even on her birthday. But when comedian Tom Price spontaneously picked on the couple at a Winchester Theatre Royal comedy gala and joked about how they'd been together for 8 years without tying the knot, Mr. Hopkins was left with no choice. He got down on one knee in front of hundreds of people and produced the diamond ring. Stacey said, "I was a bit shocked. He's normally quite a quiet person and not the type to want to draw attention to himself." David, who'd taken Stacey to the theatre for their anniversary, said, "She kind of laughed and cried." What was strange was there was a lot of emotion, and then we had to keep watching the show. Emma Stafford, marketing officer at the Theatre Royal, said, "We're absolutely delighted that the proposal took place here. It's such a romantic venue." David, age 30, a social worker for Southampton City Council, has been with Stacey, age 28, a drama and media teacher at Andover College, since they met in 2004 while studying at the University of Plymouth. And now the couple are planning a summer wedding in 2014.
And on a more sombre note, men claim they were victims of abuse too. More potential victims have come forward following the Hampshire Chronicle's revelations about alleged abuse at a former county council-run boys' home in Winchester. Claims of terrifying abuse, including beatings and rape at the hands of some staff and older pupils, had remained a dark secret within the walls of Winton House for half a century. After the Chronicle revealed last week how compensation claims have been started against Hampshire County Council by 12 former pupils, three more alleged victims have come forward. Today, the main building off Andover Road has been knocked down and redeveloped for new homes, but it seems Winton House still casts a long shadow over the lives of some deeply damaged men who were boarders there in the 60s and 70s. One former resident, who is now 51, described the alleged culture of violence as worse than The Lord of the Flies, the William Golding novel about schoolboys stranded on a desert island who grow ever more savage. He said Lord of the Flies was nothing compared to Winton House. It was run on fear and abuse. John was sent to Winton House in the 1970s at the age of 12, after his mother voluntarily placed him in care. He had been in and out of children's homes since he was 6 months old. John said, "I was used to violence from my mum who beat me, but not from staff and other boys. I'm only 5'5" now, but I was very small then. The weakest were the victims. They got the living daylights beaten out of them and were forced into some pretty unpleasant situations. That was how it was ruled. You lived in fear." He said black eyes and split lips were a regular occurrence. John says he can name staff who allegedly sexually and physically abused boys. Others turned a blind eye as some older pupils who had become victims themselves became the tormentors. Boys were sent to the boarding school by the juvenile courts and in some cases by social services if they had been neglected or abused in their own homes. 8 years ago, a police investigation resulted in only one prosecution. It is believed some of the other accused were considered too old or had died. But John and some of the other alleged victims are still hoping for an apology from the council and compensation for the assaults, later psychiatric damage and loss of earnings. John, who has been to prison twice, added, "There are some things that are burnt into your memory and you never forget. I used to sleep with a knife under my pillow. That was how it was at Winton House. The trouble is that you carried that with you when you left. If you didn't end up in prison, you were lucky. I couldn't hold down a job for years." Another former resident, called maybe Jim, had told how he went to sleep each night, hoping he would not be woken, stripped and abused. The son of an alcoholic, he had been stealing since the age of 5 to help feed his family. He was sent to Winton House in the 60s after the justice system finally ran out of patience with him. Jim is now 61 and his life has been blighted by 3 failed marriages, suicide attempts and drug addiction as he tried to block out the horrors of his past. And a secondary article saying County Council remain tight-lipped over accusations. County Council chiefs have remained tight-lipped over sex abuse compensation claims from the former pupils in Winton House. 11 men have launched legal actions claiming they were raped and beaten as boarders at the county-run home, an approved school for boys off Andover Road. The men accused some of the male staff and older boys of sexual and physical abuse in the 60s and 70s. 8 years ago, Michael Park, an ex-gardener, was jailed for 12 months after being convicted of indecently assaulting boys at the former home in Andover Road. Now the Chronicle has learnt the County Council compensated some of Park's victims several years ago. However, the local authority has refused to comment, citing legal reasons. The jailing of Park followed an investigation by Hampshire Police, codenamed Operation Grangewood, in 2001-2002. The latest compensation claims involve eight other members of staff who were not prosecuted. Councillor Roy Perry, executive lead member for Children's Service, said times had changed and protection of vulnerable children in care was now the council's utmost priority, as highlighted in a recent Ofsted inspection. The Tory chief said, "I would like to reassure Hampshire residents and that allegations made against anyone working with children and young people are fully investigated."
Meeting hears ideas to improve estate. A community centre, shop, better public transport and residents' parking permits. Those were some of the changes residents in Abbots Barton want to see after a public consultation last Thursday. The City Council hosted the event in a marquee in Chandler Road to discuss sites for new housing. Although many residents responded positively to the consultation process, they were still largely against development in the area. Gerald Butcher, 75, of Cavendish Grove, Abbots Barton, said, "If the council was so concerned about local housing, why did they let the field near Francis Gardens go to Red Row Developments? It could have built an estate there with the 90 houses going up. I read something recently about a surveyor saying there was plenty of non-green space that could be developed in Bar End. So I would suggest they look into something there. It's not that far away from the city centre." Anthony Brett, 72, a retired salesman of Chandler Road, said, "The council has done a good job of explaining the plans, but I don't like what they are saying. It's very quiet here, but that would go if more houses were built, and it's a beautiful area, so I do not want the view to change." But other residents said empty garages would be appropriate for development. Maureen Hall, 73, of Austin Close, said, "Perhaps if they built on garages, they would be able to create more space for housing and it would bring a nice balance to the area." Andrew Palmer, head officer for New Homes Delivery at the City Council, said, "It's really good that people have come along to express their opinion. Doing nothing is not an option, but we will weigh up all the contributions people make. We will evaluate suggestions like car park zones and speed limits, and some of that should be achievable. Providing a new shop might not be, because we cannot make sure that happens. But by building more houses, we bring in more people, which makes it more sustainable for a business." The council was joined at the consultation by members of Abbots Barton Community Development Action Group, which is circulating a petition. Sue Fox of the action group said, "This is a first step for us in finding out what the community wants, and the first time we have seen any plans from the council. We are not here to say, this is what should happen, but to represent our group." Councillor Ian Tate, portfolio holder for New Homes Delivery, said he thought the event was constructive for both residents and officers. He said, "It's very easy to say we support affordable housing, but no one wants it built near them. But it's been a balanced approach, and I think people understand we do not plan to lose a lot of open space in Abbots Barton." And the article is accompanied by two photographs. The first is of Rosemary and Gerald Butcher looking at plans with City Council tree officer Ivan Girdler, and on the right a portrait of Sue Fox of Abbots Barton Community Development Action.
A Hampshire charity celebrated its 90th anniversary this week. Open Sight which helps people with visual impairment and sight loss, held a Thanksgiving event at Romsey Abbey on Wednesday, with the patron, the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Dame Mary Fagan, among those who attended. Events in honour of the milestone have been held across the county, including a blind sports taster session for children, while most of OpenSight's 23 branch clubs have also marked the occasion with their own celebrations. Having successfully applied for a heritage lottery grant, the charity is also writing a book on the history of visual impairment across Hampshire and getting testimonies of people who have been helped by OpenSight. Tessa Barrett, Chief Executive of OpenSight, said, "We are achieving good things at OpenSight. We are meeting the needs of more people than ever before. And I do believe that we have much to be thankful for."
Royal Seal of Approval for Theatre Group. Winchester's Blue Apple Theatre has received a prestigious Royal Award. The Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Dame Mary Fagan, presented the group with a Queen's Award for voluntary service on Monday. The theatre group works with children with learning disabilities, and several of them attended the ceremony at the Tower Arts Centre at King's School. Jane Jessop, founding director of Blue Apple, said, "Blue Apple Theatre would not exist without its volunteers. This award is a wonderful way to mark the contribution of over 100 volunteers, from sixth formers and student participants to professionals who give their time in kind, fundraisers and board members. We are so grateful to all of them. They have helped us to bring all the fun and benefit of taking part in high-quality theatrical and film productions to people with learning disabilities. They help enable participants to discover their talents, follow their dreams, and produce great performances which are fun to watch and which make us think." Dame Mary said, "It is a great pleasure to present this award to the Blue Apple Theatre, whose volunteers help to break down barriers and raise awareness through their artistic abilities. Blue Apple was one of 112 groups nationwide to receive the honour, which is the equivalent of an MBE for an organisation, and the 24th in Hampshire to win since the award was created for the Queen's Golden Jubilee in 2002, and is a lovely photograph of Dame Mary Fagan in a bright yellow jacket handing over the award, and everyone with their arms in the air smiling and laughing and obviously thrilled."
Jail term was right, say judges. A man finally brought to justice after 10 years on the run in Spain for trying to smuggle drugs into Winchester prison in a pair of trainers has been told by top judges he deserves every day of his jail term. Mariano Ángel Sánchez Cañadas sent a package containing heroin and cannabis stashed inside a hollowed-out pair of trainers to an inmate in the jail in 2002. He was finally traced to Spain and extradited back to the UK earlier this year, and was jailed for 3 years and 9 months at Winchester Crown Court in May, after he admitted attempting to supply drugs into prison. The 53-year-old of Richmond Grove, Islington, North London, challenged his sentence at London's Criminal Appeal Court, with his lawyers arguing it was too long for his crime. But his appeal was dismissed by three of the country's most senior judges, who said he was singularly fortunate to be given the term he was after evading justice for a decade. The court heard the package arrived at Winchester Prison in 2002, and officers discovered the trainers had been hollowed out and contained 11 grams of heroin and a small amount of cannabis resin. Sánchez Cañadas had written a false return address on the package in the hope it wouldn't be traced back to him, but he was caught after his fingerprint was found inside. However, while on bail, he fled to Spain and remained there for 10 years, during which the court heard he ran a bar, before being arrested and brought back to the UK. The court heard he had a previous conviction for supplying drugs in 1992, for which he served a 3-year sentence. His lawyers argued his jail term was excessive, saying the Crown Court judge placed too much emphasis on the fact that this was a bid to send drugs into prison, and didn't give enough weight to the fact it was an unsuccessful attempt. But, dismissing the appeal, Lord Justice Hughes said supplying drugs into prison, where they could be used as currency and an instrument of power, was a very serious offence, and could have been dealt with more harshly given his years on the run.
Find out about the forest's oldest living inhabitants. They witnessed the Roundheads fighting the Cavaliers during the English Civil War. They witnessed Queen Elizabeth I defeating the Spanish Armada. And they survived being used for shipbuilding during the Napoleonic Wars. And now, for the first time, you can find out more about the New Forest's ancient trees, some of which are reputed to be over 1,000 years old, and you can find this out in an interactive exhibition. The months-long display at the New Forest Centre in Lyndhurst is sponsored by ExxonMobil at the nearby Fawley Refinery and attempts to unravel the mystery of these ancient trees. Brian Wilson, the senior tree officer at the New Forest National Park Authority, said, "The New Forest is of exceptional importance for ancient and veteran trees. Indeed, it has a greater concentration than anywhere else in Western Europe. Nearly 1,500 trees have been recorded, and we know that there are more still to find." They can be discovered almost anywhere. However, the greatest numbers survive within the ancient and ornamental New Forest woodlands that once formed a great medieval hunting ground, which remains remarkably intact to this day. And the exhibition on these trees runs from October the 20th to November the 25th at the New Forest Centre in Lyndhurst, which is open every day from 10 in the morning to 4:30 in the afternoon.
Chris answers the call of charity at Naomi House. This is a feature article where Joseph Curtis meets Chris Robinson, chief executive of Sutton Scotney-based Children's Hospice, and hears about his varied and unusual background. It's fair to say Chris Robinson's CV stands out among the crowd. He's been homeless, worked on a dockyard, dabbled in finance, run for Parliament, and managed a football club. But charity has been his calling for the past decade, and earlier this year he became the chief executive at Naomi House Children's Hospice. He said he was looking forward to the challenge of picking up where former boss Ray Kipling left off. "My predecessor Ray did an excellent job here for 7 years, so we have a really good management team and governance structure. I didn't come here to fix anything that was broken," Mr. Robinson said, "but I have to make sure we do not stand still and we want to go forwards here. We want to improve some of the facilities at Naomi House. It's 17 years old now and there are things we can do better and we are looking at how to do that. We also want to build up occupancy at Jack's Place. There are only 3 units like this in the country, as a hospice for 15 to 25-year-olds is unusual, so we want to build up the occupancy and would love to extend our services to the community and help families in their own homes." Life was difficult in his early years in London, and aged 2 in 1956, he was homeless for a few weeks when his family of 4 struggled to find a home. But Mr. Robinson, now 58, describes those years as a positive experience because he always felt loved. "In a strange way, I always say I had a fortunate childhood. My sister and I were in a family where we were told we were loved every day, and there was nothing we could not do if we worked hard enough," he said. But soon they found a home in South Islington, and he grew up with a strong work ethic graduating from Sheffield University with a degree in political theory, before earning a master's in economics from the London School of Economics while working at Millwall Docks. He then became a trade union speaker before moving into business and finance in London. But throughout his early career, he played semi-professional football, turning out for teams across the country. His breakthrough came in 1995 when he became manager of Cheltenham Town, then in the Southern League. When the side was on the verge of promotion in 1997, he was given the boot to be replaced by Steve Cotterill. He said, "Football is a wonderful world, a small world, but a crazy world. We were just about to win promotion and my contract was up for renegotiation at the end of the season. It broke my heart because it was my dream job and I had worked hard to get the job and I was successful, yet I got the sack." In 1998, he began working in the charity sector and has not looked back since. It led to Mr. Robinson, a former trade unionist and Labour Party parliamentary candidate in Lancashire, getting a job managing Boris Johnson's Mayor's Fund in London. "My job was to go into the city and get money from the big corporations and get money for poor kids in London. I had a lot of fun working with Boris. He's a great character," he said. Inspired by his parents, he has gone on to have a big family with 7 children, 6 boys and a girl. But tragedy struck last year when his 24-year-old son Danny died due to a rare blood disorder which had impaired his immune system all his life. Mr. Robinson said, "Last year Danny was offered a bone marrow transplant, which was a big gamble. But if it had worked, he would have led a normal life and he wanted to do it. And it was his decision, but unfortunately it didn't." He added he was unsure if the experience had helped him relate to parents of terminally ill children at Naomi House. "I hope before it happened I had an understanding, but as one parent said to me, you have crossed the line that fortunately few people have to cross." And there's some lovely photographs of him with Boris Johnson and Sir Trevor Chin, and him in front of Naomi House, which looks very cosy and welcoming, and Jack's Place, which is a modern building, but obviously very good functional, and one of him with the football club, looking quite a bit younger in those days, but comes to all of us.
The sweet smell of Katsura. Autumn weather has brought with it a tree with an unusual smell at a Hampshire Gardens. The Sir Harold Hillier Gardens in Ampfield near Romsey has several Katsura trees that at this time of year gives off a distinctive candy floss-like smell. As its leaves take on their autumn colour, they emit the scent of burnt sugar, and consequently it is often referred to by younger visitors as the candy floss tree. The Katsura tree can mature to 40 feet or more, and it is native to Japan and Eastern Asia. It is widely used as a garden and landscape ornamental tree in many parts of the world. Entry to Sir Harold Hillier Gardens is free for children under 17 when accompanied by a paying adult. There are several Katsuras at Sir Harold Hillier Gardens, details of which are available at reception.
Time to take a rest. A policeman is hanging up his handcuffs after more than 33 years of service in the Hampshire area. Sergeant Dave Phillips, who most recently has been based in Stockbridge, has also worked in Basingstoke, Alton, Gosport, Weyhill and Andover. Sergeant Phillips joined the force in August 1979 at Basingstoke as a police constable, before spells of service at Alton and then Gosport, where he met his wife and they had 4 children. He later moved to Andover in January 1994 and has served in the local area ever since. A strange call during his career came at Weyhill in the late 1990s when he had to drive the carcass of a dead camel as it couldn't be disposed of legally in any other way. Sergeant Phillips said, "I should have retired 3 years ago, but I decided to stay on because I love the job. But I'm probably not as fast now as I used to be, and now is a good time to go." He added, "I have enjoyed being able to go out and talk to people in the local community and communicate with them, and have loved my job as a sergeant." He's now moving on to work for You Trust, a Hampshire-based organisation which provides care, housing and support to both individuals and families. And Sergeant Phillips said he was looking forward again to doing something to benefit people in a new challenge.
County theme park voted best in UK by Mums. A Hampshire theme park has been voted the best in the country. Paulton's Park, near Rumsey, won the national competition run by parenting site netmums.com, which saw the attraction top the poll in three of the five categories. The park was voted Best Family Theme Park, Best Theme Park for Preschoolers, and Kids' Favourite Theme Park. It was also runner-up for Most Improved Food. The park opened in May 1983 as Paulton's Country Park and Bird Gardens and housed the largest private collection of wildfowl in the south of England. It has since grown into one of the South's major family destinations and continues to grow with currently more than 60 rides and attractions. More than 1 million people came through the doors last year. Steve Lawton, Commercial Director of Paulton's Park, said, "We are absolutely delighted to have won these three awards, particularly as they've been voted for by parents and acknowledged that Paulton's Park and Peppa Pig World is the ultimate family destination."
Liam Fox visit. A former Secretary of State for Defence is coming to Winchester next month. Dr. Liam Fox will be in the city on Friday, November the 2nd, to discuss the coalition, defence matters and the future of the UK. He will appear alongside Winchester MP Steve Brine at a venue yet to be announced. Mr. Brine said, "I am hugely excited that Dr. Liam Fox will be coming down to speak with local people. He is a hugely respected figure, and I know that issues surrounding the armed forces in particular are of great interest to many across Winchester and Chandler's Ford, as so many of my constituents have military connections, both past and present."
Birthday, a bittersweet occasion for Rotherley. There were mixed feelings at a special anniversary for a Winchester school recently. The Mayor of Winchester, Frank Pearson, helped the Westgate School celebrate 60 years of state boarding for girls at its Rotherley House unit. But it was also a sad day for the school, as the County Council is closing the boarding house from July 2013. A number of former boarders returned for the anniversary last month and were given tours of their old home by school staff. Rotherley was set up in 1952 to cater for the education of daughters of service personnel. It was one of a handful of similar facilities across the UK. Over its 60 years, it has also welcomed students from Hong Kong, Spain, France, and the Falklands.
Big bouquet for Brendan Care. A Chandler's Ford care home has been honoured for its care of residents. The Dame Sheila Quinn unit at Brendan Care Knightwood won the Outstanding Contribution to Improving Learning and Performance at the Brendan Care Awards in 2012. The team at the unit helped residents maximise their physical activity while enjoying a healthy lifestyle and diet. It included recruiting specialists and nutritionists to help devise diets residents could easily use when home with their families. Unit manager Nikki Toomer said, "We are delighted to receive this award. The team work incredibly hard on a daily basis to ensure residents get the best of care day in, day out. It's great to know that their hard work is really benefiting residents, but this award is the icing on the cake." Brendan Care run 10 care homes and 60 clubs across Hampshire and Dorset. And there's a lovely photograph of 8 smiling, happy women and one charming man in the middle who looks very young, but anyway, a good bunch. Over to you.
Townsfolk taken for a ride at Funfair. It both disrupts the life of the town for 12 hours and then brings joy, but then disappears for 364 days. The Michaelmas Fair closed Broad Street in Alresford for the day last Thursday, as it has for decades. The fun fair was in town, exercising its ancient rites. The fairground operators, John Wall and Son, in their veteran Foden trucks, paid £1,100 to Alresford Town Trust for the right to set up its rides in the town. From 3 to 10pm, hundreds of local people took the opportunity to brave the rain and have fun, just feet from Georgian houses before the rides were dismantled in the early hours of Friday. The heavy lorries that ply their trade down to the watercress beds were given plenty of warning about the closure. Some 50 a day use Broad Street, but three had to be politely told by the town council marshals they were not going down Broad Street last Thursday. Instead, they had to laboriously turn round, head back to Winchester to take the A33 and then turn down Northington Road at the former Lunways Inn. And the piece is illustrated by four pictures of the fun fair and the various rides that were there.
Old Home, the perfect place for a party. Business people, MPs, civic chiefs and religious leaders were among the special guests who helped the Hampshire Chronicle celebrate its 240th anniversary last week. Editor Keith Redbourne and staff hosted a reception at Zizzy's in the High Street, the former offices where the Chronicle was produced for nearly 200 years until 2004. The restaurant is decorated with old pages and memorabilia from the Chronicle's long and proud history. Mr. Redbourne thanked the 70-plus guests for making it such a special day for everyone involved with the paper. He said, "It's incredible to think that in 1772, when the paper was founded, very few people could actually read. Founder James Lyndon also had to pay stamp duty and a tax on newsprint. Not exactly a great business model, but here we are, 240 years later. He added that the Chronicle was now a multimedia business and would continue to evolve and adapt to the changing needs of its readers and advertisers in the future. Managing Director Stuart Dunn said, "Where we are standing was previously the Advertising and Promotions Department, and before that, it's where the printing press was. You could smell the mix of molten lead and ink and paper, and although it was removed, most of it still left buried in the concrete." Guests enjoyed a variety of delicious canapé and drinks supplied by Zizzy's, as well as a special Hampshire Chronicle 240th anniversary cake.
Proud moment for Gareth. The Royal Albert Hall played host to the Rifles Regiment, with Winchester's Lance Corporal Gareth Merchant playing a special role. As the Colonel-in-Chief's bugler, Gareth, 27, pictured above, who lives at Worthydown, is recognised as the Rifles' best. The concert Swift and Bold is in support of Care for Casualties, the regiment's charity, which cares for injured soldiers and their families. Gareth said, For us, it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. The Royal Albert Hall is just another scale completely. In August, the Hampshire Chronicle reported how, for the first time since its formation in 2007, all of the massed bands and bugles of the Rifles met to rehearse at the Sir John Moore Barracks in Littleton in readiness for last night's concert. Almost 300 men and women from the regiment played at the world-renowned venue from 7:30pm. And there's a lovely picture of Gareth outside the Albert Hall in all his wonderful uniform with a dashing red-plumed hat with his bugle held up to play.
Zumba on the Streets. Winchester dance instructors and their students came up with a unique way to promote a charity event by performing outside the City Museum in the square. Instructor Samantha Horn said, "We did this as we are holding a charity Zumbathon for Naomi House and Jack's Place on Saturday, October the 27th at Oceana Ice House, and wanted to promote the event in a different way. The weather was just perfect, and we all felt really exhilarated after we had finished. The feedback from spectators was brilliant." The instructors all run their own classes in and around Winchester during weekdays, and also teach at fitness centres around the city. The charity Zumbathon begins at 11 a.m. For more details, call 01962 843 513. I'll repeat that: 01962 843 513.
Thank you, and that concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. And thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Robin Freeman.
Goodbye.
And Bobby Sanderson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent. Goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. When you finish with this week's recording, please pop the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, and place the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.